The following is an at-will presentation.
Hey guys, it's Nico. Look, this is a really special episode with someone that I didn't know very well at all before this conversation. As you know, I begin each one of these with some spoken word, a poem that I write. But today, we're going to start off with something written by a mutual friend about the person you are about to get to know, Ryan Muirhead. I'm not sure where you're from, but I wonder if they fly, not walk there. Do they breathe water, not air? Do you live in rainbows? Is that why you've worn a rainbow headband for years? Do they all hear light and shadow the way that you do? Some people work hard to achieve wealth, others for accolades and trophies, trophy wives, but you, my dear, work the hardest of all simply to exist. Your soul is taking a study of what it's like to be human. Delicately. Your words are delicate. Your body, delicate. You even sleep, delicately. But your eyes are on fire. You can blend in if you want to, but one look into your eyes and your cover is blown. You're not from here. You're experiencing what it would like to be from here. It's not an easy task you've been given, being human, having a form to live in. I don't think you like it a whole lot. But that's only because you are more soul than flesh. You document people, moments, unposed, raw. And the images you make are art because you see art in existence. You see the fairy dust in the gutters, the delicate nuances of being alive. The grace of standing still or making a cup of coffee or just scraping your knee. I hope that when you do go back to your planet, you bring with you all of your images you captured. Your captured moments because you see beauty in ways very few humans can and thus are the best candidate to describe what it's like to feel, to see, to hear. And live in a strange human body on the planet Earth. Thank you for being in my life. Thank you for capturing some of my moments. And thank you for adding me to your soul's field study. I met him first in my own apartment. A friendly alien encounter. Immediately physically moved and happy to have a Wes Anderson character standing and walking in my kitchen. He speaks soft and deep with a trembling humming in his vocal cords. A man of complicated experience, unlike anything I've ever experienced. I am in here tattooed on his chest as a reminder that he is, in fact, in there. I just want him to know that I am here too.
My name is Nico Tortorella.
Welcome to the Love Bomb. This is a conversation with a dude I love named Ryan.
Muirhead.
Yeah.
Ryan Muirhead.
You don't have to put three syllables in it.
Muirhead.
Yeah.
It's M-U-R-I?
M-U-I-R.
M-U-I, oh, Muirhead.
So like John Muir, the environmentalist?
Okay,
that
okay.
With a head, Muirhead.
All right. How old are you, Ryan?
I'm 35.
35. And I'm going to ask you this question, even though we were just talking about how you don't like this type of small talk, but where are you from?
I'm from Orem, Utah, but I live in Portland, Oregon now. I moved there 2 years ago.
Okay. What do you do?
I guess if what I spend my time doing is I'm a photographer, but I don't do any work for money, so.
You don't do any work for money at all?
No, I sell prints and I teach about photography, but I don't do any shoots like where I'm paid to produce a photograph.
Not because you don't want to, but just because...
It might be because I don't want to.
Okay.
It's a really, really personal thing for me to make imagery. It came from a kind of excruciating place, and I'm kind of terrified of losing how sincerely I do it when I do it.
So how do you make money?
From selling prints of my photographs.
Okay.
And from teaching about photography.
Okay.
And that comes from just social media.
And what do you shoot for the most part?
Almost everything I shoot is people. The more it progresses, I kind of started out just doing shoots with models, but that was just because I was terrified of people, and models are people who want you to take their photos. I didn't really have an interest in fashion or beauty photography or anything, but it's kind of evolved now to just like the important people in my life.
How many important people do you think you have in your life right now?
More and more. Lots. Man, I don't know how to put a number on that, but it's really significant.
Okay.
Which has been beautiful and really hard.
Right.
Like, I have people that it breaks my heart to leave, and I won't see them for a year or two.
You grew up part of a church, correct?
The church, as they called it.
Oh, it is the church.
Yeah, it's referred to as the church.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Mormonism.
Yeah, I grew up Mormon. I stopped attending when I was about 24, but I didn't leave. I didn't, like, start dealing with leaving until I was about 32, and I didn't leave, like, took my name off until about 8 months ago.
What does it mean, take your name off?
They're so very...
You're part of a registry of sorts?
Yeah, and that they really follow up with. I mean, I hadn't gone to church in, like, 10 years, and when I moved from Utah to Oregon, like, within a week, two missionaries had shown up and been like, we have your records, we know you live here, like,
really?
Come back to church. Yeah.
They, like, found out where you were living?
Yeah. And that was the taking your name off. That's why it was significant, meaning they had a record of where I lived. I moved. Someone told the leader of the old congregation I used to be in, I moved. They found out where I lived, sent it to the new leader of the Portland congregation, and they sent people out to contact me, like, 10 years after I had even stopped attending. Yeah, it was a really kind of heartbreaking conversation, too, because I wanted, I've been working so hard on being more honest and open about what it did to me. And I wanted to tell the people that came to contact me,
right.
But they brought a mentally handicapped gentleman with them who then just kind of cried and told me it was the best thing ever and that I really needed to come back. And that was kind of the dynamic. And, I didn't want to say anything to him, so I just kind of sat through it.
And you think they brought him for that reason?
Oh, without a doubt.
It's not even a question.
Oh, without a doubt.
Just built-in manipulation. Wow.
I like to believe it comes from the sincerest of intentions that they think I need to come back 100%. To go to heaven with them. But it was very, couldn't present a counterpoint. They had a mentally challenged guy crying about how important it was I come back.
Okay, so if he wasn't there, what were you going to say?
Well, they were missionaries. Missionaries. That was who came. And I went on one of those. And it was the pivotal moment of my life. I didn't want to go. I was too scared to tell them I didn't want to go. And in the training program, I had a complete everything breakdown. My stomach stopped working. I had internal bleeding in my intestines. I got sleep paralysis, panic attacks. Until, I physically collapsed to such a point that they were like, you just have to go home. Like, you can't even participate anymore. And I know it came from, the inability to reconcile. This isn't me. I need to be able to talk about this, to being so controlled and so scared that I couldn't open my mouth. And I just fell apart internally. And I guess I didn't really answer the question. I would have wanted to relate, I've been who you are. I've been in the program of you contacting me, and I've had a real different viewpoint on it now. I couldn't say it. Again, couldn't say it.
Couldn't say
it. It's funny that dynamic returns in a different way.
Right. But if you could say it right now, what is it?
Wow. That you're in the tightest box ever right now. I mean, when you're a missionary, it's so controlled. You don't get to talk to your family. One of your parents is dying of cancer. You don't get to go home. You're paying for it yourself. And everything is regimented. And I think it's to condition you to stay Mormon for the rest of your life.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I have 3 sisters and 1 brother. I'm the oldest of 5 kids, kind of typical big Mormon family.
And how many are still in the church?
Half a sister. I have a sister who still attends, but I wouldn't want to speak for her what her commitment level is. But then my 2 other sisters and my brother are completely out.
And are your parents still fully in?
My parents are still in, and that is another one of the more challenging dynamics of my life.
Do you speak to them on a regular basis?
Constantly.
Oh, really?
I'm really close to everyone in my family.
Really?
All the time.
What were you taught about love in the church?
it's love with, I think, probably any religious kind of congregation is such a focus of the doctrine, but you know, just kind of the biblical Book of Mormon, Jesus love, all that stuff. But I didn't. Do you mean love like love or like sexuality love?
However you wanted to answer it, really.
I should probably start with the first one. The second one's a much more complicated thing.
Yeah.
I mean, to its credit, Mormonism is really big on kindness and community and family and sincerely, you know, really being close in that way.
Right.
And I'm actually really thankful for that part of it. I mean, I think it led to how close I am with my family. Mm-hmm. I mean, sometimes I don't realize it. I think I have a much more communicative and active relationship with siblings than a lot of people do. I mean, I talk to almost all my siblings almost every day.
About what?
Everything. Well, no, not everything. Wow, I just lied. Everything except human sexuality.
So are you talking about what's going on in the world and like their relationships with their partners and their kids and all of those things?
To some degree, different levels with different siblings. But yeah, world events and life updates. We have a family group text thread that does like between 10 and 300 messages a day.
Jesus.
With our whole family in it. Like, and it's very active.
Do you have your alerts on so it's buzzing every time somebody
comes up?
Wow.
So sometimes I'll come out of something like this and it's like 280 new text messages. And I love that about my family.
I mean, that's amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm super tight with my family. We are on a group text message, and I would say talk that much, but yeah, I mean, it's totally different. Okay, so now the second half of the question was, what were you taught about sexuality and human contact love?
Yeah, not a lot, and what there was pretty scary, to be honest. You know, I had the, like, sex talk from my dad at, like, 8 or something, but it was a very... It was very, you know, awkward. I guess that goes without saying. It's usually an awkward conversation. But there wasn't a lot of like...
Yeah, I mean, my mom bought me my first Playboy at that same age. There was no awkward conversation that happened at all.
Nothing like that. And then the religious reinforcement was really, really aggressive. I mean, some of the lessons that they'd teach you as like a kid is like your sexuality is like a stick of gum. And once you're participating in that, it's like somebody chewing that. And once it's been chewed, like that piece of chewed gum, that's you now.
Wow.
That kind of stuff. It's almost hard to see now because I've been working so hard on like getting out there and sharing stuff. But I was a terrified kid.
I mean, you've said this word scared and terrified at least 10 times since we've been in this room. And it's been, what, 10 minutes?
Yeah.
What were you scared of?
Well, I guess you have to kind of understand the dynamic. Like in Mormonism, like... If you masturbate, you have to go confess to the leader of the whole congregation in a private room with him. Parents don't get to come. And this is boys or girls, and the leader is always male. So you can have like a 9-year-old sitting in a room with a 65-year-old grilling them about touching themselves.
Right.
And I mean, some kids, it's like, I was terrified of that.
If you hurt somebody... If you got into a fight and you physically hurt somebody, was that as much of a sin?
Oh, no.
Not at
all. Oh, no. I mean, this is an actual teaching in Mormonism. Denying the spirit, you know, is the number one sin, like denying that you believe this. Number two is murder. And number three, right below murder, and that's how they discuss it.
Yeah.
Right below murder is anything sexually impure, like masturbation. Is this far below murder.
So what is the only thing that is sexually pure, the act of having sex to procreate? In a marriage.
Yeah, in a marriage.
Under God.
Yeah.
So nobody's having sex before you get married?
Well, I mean, people are, but like the you know, in Mormonism, like the punishments are really severe too. Like if you drink a green tea, you can't go to your brother's wedding.
Why?
Because there's a strict health code, and if you violate the health code, it's serious enough to exclude you from events like weddings.
So caffeine intake is part of the health code.
Well, they let you drink soda. So, I mean, it's...
Really?
It's...
So Coke is fine, but coffee is not.
Yeah, and the church owns stock in Coke and Pepsi.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
But, I mean, this is something that actually happened to me. Like, I was not a member, active member of the church... But still wasn't even doing anything sexual. But just from not being going enough, I couldn't attend my brother's wedding. I had to stand outside while other family members were inside. And I'm that close to my siblings. I mean, it kind of killed me. That level of the terror and control. I mean, like, I was so afraid of messing up that, like, I didn't kiss a girl, like, a peck maybe, but I mean, like, engage in real kissing until I was, like, 25 or 26. I didn't masturbate until I was, like, 24 for the first time ever. And I don't mean, like, I mean ever. And it was, and the guilt that came with it was just, like, life-destroying.
Like, how? Did you immediately go to the church and tell them at 24?
No. I mean, I was so terrified of, like,
of what?
Confessing it, having to say it out loud, just like.
And what's the worst thing that was going to happen? What is the punishment from the church for masturbating?
Lack of participation. In a way, it's like social shaming, because one of the big parts of the Mormon service is doing the sacrament, you know, like Catholics do or something, but it's every week and you don't go up. You're like in the group of people and they pass it to you. And like if you've told the bishop, like, I masturbated, they'll be like, on Sunday, you can't take it. Like, take the tray and just give it to the next person. And it's so everyone's sitting
everybody
together
knows.
Looking. It's like
it's just public shame.
It's just public shaming.
Is okay, so say I'm 18 years old. Okay,
yeah.
I'm in the church and I have a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And we are holding hands. Is that something that is allowed?
That's fine.
Is kissing allowed?
It gets into these real weird terms, like from the 50s when they came up with it. Like, they'll say what's not allowed, and these are literally the words I was instructed with, are petting and necking. And I didn't even know what those meant. And I'm like...
And who's explaining these things to you?
Nobody. So the first time we had a church lesson on masturbation, it wasn't explicit. It was like, you cannot do this. And I didn't know what it meant. And I was so scared and ashamed I didn't even know what it meant. I went home and got the dictionary to look it up, but I thought it was spelt with an E and not a U, and I couldn't even find it in the dictionary. And I was too scared to ask anyone. And for a significant amount of time at an embarrassing age, I mean like 20 or 21, you know, once I found it in a dictionary, it was like sexually stimulating your reproductive organs, you know, whatever it said. I thought like touching your penis counted.
When was the first time you woke up with a hard on? You're like, oh, what is this? Like, what do I do with this?
You know, there's a ton of stuff that's gone too. I mean, I got to a pretty
you
dark
mean memory
place
wise.
About it and kind of
just blocked it
I don't
all.
Know. I don't know the answer to that.
How do you identify sexually today?
Scared? Is that an identity? Can I just keep using that?
Yeah. I mean, it works for me. Who the fuck am I to say that that doesn't work?
Straight without experience. I'm like embarrassed to answer the question.
Yeah, no.
You know, like I don't feel like I have, you know, to say like, oh, explain what that means. You know, I'm like getting nervous for the follow-up question that I don't have enough figured out to like
which is fine.
Know the answer.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
I'm mainly, you know, I'm attracted to women. I'm attracted to some men too. And I would like, I'd kiss a guy, but I don't have like a desire for an ongoing like physical relationship.
Well, do you have a desire for an ongoing physical relationship with a woman?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay. When was the first time that you knew that that's something that you wanted?
You know, I guess it would probably be, you know, early on.
Early
like,
on.
Elementary school, right. Junior high stuff. But I was so...
Because that's what you were taught was the right thing to do. Right.
I mean, that was the only answer.
Question is, how do you differ from the majority of the people that you knew that grew up in the church at the same time that you did?
You know, I didn't even realize some of this until recently, like talking to friends. Because I didn't have friends that ever talked about sexual or physical stuff.
At all.
No, like my friend group didn't even discuss it. Well,
what was your connection to pop culture and media? Like, did you have a TV? Were you connected to the internet?
That's a funny question. Like when I got into junior high, like the first day and everyone's wearing like band shirts and stuff, they're like, what do you listen to? I was like, is this a thing we do? Like we wear music t-shirts about who we like? I listened to like Broadway plays. I was into like Phantom of the Opera.
Nobody,
going into junior high.
Nobody can see right now. He's wearing a Nirvana shirt, which is funny enough. I mean, but you weren't like listening to Rent.
No.
That musical was full of innuendos and experience. That.
My dad used to go to a lot of Broadway shows, and he actually went to Rent, and he had seen like 25 shows, and I'm pretty sure he walked out. I'm pretty sure one of my I have a memory of him being like, yeah, it was offensive, and I left.
Rent was one of the first Broadway shows I'd ever seen. I was in New York. I was 12 years old. My grandma came. She brought us to New York, and she had no idea what Rent was. And she brought us to Rent. She was very upset that we decided that that's the one that we wanted to see. But, yeah. Okay, so next question. When was the first time that you had a sexual experience? If you didn't masturbate till what, 24, 25?
I'd hate to lie and give an incorrect date, but I mean it's early 20s.
Early 20s, something. Okay, that's fine.
That would probably be it. I mean, I hadn't touched boobs. I hadn't made out with anybody. So I mean, that would be it. Sometime
early 20s.
Early 20s.
And what was it for you? How was it?
Oh, horrible. Really horrible. I'm sure I looked at porn or something and finally did. And then just the...
This is you masturbating.
Yeah.
Okay. No. Sorry. I think my question was a little confusing. When was the first time that you had sexual experience with somebody else?
I mean, I think I honestly need to ask what counts.
That's fine. Go ahead.
What counts?
when was the first time you, made out with a girl? I guess let's just go through the bases.
Yeah, mid-20s, probably 25 or something.
Do you remember it fully?
No.
No, you don't?
No.
When was the first time that you, felt a girl's boobs?
Probably, 28.
28?
Yeah, 27 or 28.
Do you remember that one? What's the first picture you see in your head?
Oh, my gosh, I do. And I didn't realize I do until right now.
Tell me.
So at this time, I was already I was back in school to be a photographer, and I was in this art history class, and I had a friend I sat next to in the back row, and we were kind of the two kids the teacher hated because we were smart but not respectful enough. This was in Utah, in Orem, with an old Mormon teacher.
Right.
And I had a red mohawk at the time, and he was not happy about it.
How did you even know that a red mohawk was something that you wanted to do? Where did that come from?
Just trying weird stuff. Once in high school, I found this leopard bodysuit, a leopard onesie. And I've had these inclinations since I was little, and I was like, oh my God, I want to wear that.
To play dress up.
Yeah, and I put on this leopard suit and walked to high school as a really shy kid and got in the door 10 steps and was like, fuck, except I wouldn't have said fuck at the time. But I was like, fuck, what am I doing? Put something a t-shirt over my head and then ran home and changed. But, had made it to school doing that.
I'm pretty sure I wore a leopard onesie at one point in high school, too.
But it wasn't, a confident statement. I'm sorry. I, way detoured off that.
No,
oh,
I really loved it.
So I was sitting with this girl in class.
Wait, hold on.
Oh, sorry.
Okay, no, keep going. You're sitting with this girl in class.
In the art history class, and we had been friends a while, and I was just getting into the, brave enough to ask people I didn't know really well to take their photos. And I think I had taken a portrait or two of her. Oh, no, I hadn't yet. Anyway, in class, one day she came in and she had gotten a boob job. And I think we had already planned to, take a couple photos. And so we went to the studio to shoot. And I think I was just going to do, a bare shoulders, real simple portrait.
Yeah.
I think that was the whole thing. And she was way more – I don't think she was Mormon. And she was way more comfortable than me anyway. And we went to take it. And she just, took off her bra.
And what's the first feeling that you have when she...
I'd probably be lying if I said I remember. Just that was more than I was planning on. And then I just, I had a lot of general human curiosity because I was starting to get into you can talk about stuff you don't understand.
Right.
And I was so you got a boob job. Now you have something in you that is your body now that you weren't born with. That's an inherently interesting human activity, how do you feel about that? And she was telling me some of it, and she was like, oh, and they feel differently. And I was like, oh, no, I don't know. And she was like, oh, do you want to touch them? And I was like, okay. And I did, just really simply. And man, I have to be 28. And I was like, wow, that is the first time I have ever felt a breast.
And it was right?
at a photo shoot, just being like, oh yeah, touch it.
And but you had shot nudes before, yeah?
No.
No,
definitely not.
Okay.
No, I hadn't.
Because now a lot of your work is nudes, yeah. Correct?
Yeah.
What's that about?
I mean, that's kind of the big answer. When I mean, lots of long story short.
Yeah.
When I when I took my first picture ever, I would say I was absolutely suicidal. Like, this physical illness that I got at 19 that I was telling you about spiraled into, like, incredible pain, physical and mental, and insomnia and horrible anxiety and depression. I was just a fucking wreck. And that was, like, 19. And it went until I took my first photo ever at, like, 26 or 27. And when I started shooting, this wasn't my intention, but really quickly, I mean, you're an artist, you know, something you're going through makes its way into your work. Mm-hmm. And I started seeing it and I was like, oh my God, like, this is your vehicle to address all the stuff that's too scary to talk about.
And to heal.
And it really quickly, you know, like, the thing that was killing me more than anything was honestly, like, sexuality and not understanding and being terrified of it and having no experiences and feeling so lonely and isolated about it and having nobody to even talk to about it. I mean, I'm sure there would have been someone, a friend that would have talked to me about it, but too scared to even be like, I'm fucked up about this and I need to talk about it. And so it all went, you know, it just found its way into work. But that, even that is the real complicated thing today, because above everything, I value being, like, honest and kind now, you right. know, and I'm...
Which, I mean... Isn't that the basis of the church too, first
yeah.
and foremost?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I saw the, like, oh, I think there would be something really profound for me to say with shooting nudes. But I hated most of the nudes I saw, you know, just like I saw it as, like, sexually exploitative and taking advantage of somebody to make something you wanted to make. And I didn't want that at all. I wanted it to be, like, collaborative and beautiful and honest.
How does it make you feel that some people probably look at your pictures and think they're exploitive?
That I try my absolute hardest to dig deep and make something the best way I know how. And that I'm sure people do see it like that. And I try to not even dismiss that. I try to go back at it and look at it again and again. And why are you doing this? And how are you treating the people you're working with? And where do you put the work? And what does it mean to you? And to try and stay, you know, what else can you do but your best answer of, I'm trying, and I'm trying to do it well and kind. But I think about that a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, that's another point of that. I haven't lost the muscle memory of guilt. I mean, still, when I shoot nudes, I have a, like, you know, the muscle jerk reaction of, like, you're doing something wrong. You're hurting yourself and you're hurting other people.
Well, that's my question. Are you hurting yourself more or are you hurting the other person more?
Yeah, I don't know.
Is there anything that's taught in the church from the beginning that is about taking care of yourself and loving yourself and being honest with yourself? Or is it all for the purpose of this higher being?
I mean, right now, I still keep up with church press releases and right. stuff they put out because, I mean, I run a Facebook support group for people leaving or trying to leave.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
Oh.
But just like a week ago, one of the leaders of the church, like as high as up as it gets, released a statement to the youth of the church that said, being Christ-like, and they have a big monopoly on saying what Christ-like is, being Christ-like is more important than being your authentic self. Like, that's in the last 7 days.
Wow.
Like, being how we tell you to be is more important than following what feels true to you.
How big is this church right now?
They claim 15 million members.
Worldwide.
Yeah. But I mean, in the city I grew up in, I was born in a city of like 100,000 people. It's like 95% white and Mormon.
Right.
Which is what really warps you so much. You know, you grow up and you're 10 years old and you're like, I've met 15,000 people.
Yeah.
And they all said, yeah, this is true. And they all told you that. It sinks in like, oh, it definitely is.
This is real.
The authority you get from the bubble is intense.
Right. You wouldn't consider yourself asexual of any sort, right?
I was thinking about that when I was listening to one of your episodes on the way over here, and yeah. I was like, yeah, what are you?
You were almost like taught asexuality.
Yeah, like if you don't, I mean, that's the expectation. If you don't get married, you die celibate. You die a virgin if you don't get married.
Okay, so once you're married, right? Say I get married. Am I taught anything about sex then?
No. Oh, my gosh. I have so many friends who have told the story of, like, got married wedding night, like no one knew what was going on.
Nobody had any idea.
You know, I wouldn't want to speak for everyone. Because, I'm sure there's parents that were super open-minded and taught them way better.
We're talking like the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't even know the... This is mixed with my parents, too. You know, there was like no discussion of sexuality. There still isn't.
But they had five kids. So there was no secret that they were having sex.
But just... It's hard to explain just from being a kid that that is not on the table for a subject of discussion.
But were you taught that this is where a baby comes from? This is how a baby is made?
I mean, that was in the like 8-year-old sex talk. But no, you know, like I didn't know what masturbation was. I didn't know.
But it wasn't set up in a sense that like this is male, this is female. This is what happens then a baby. Was there any like...
Yeah, that was probably the 8-year-old sex talk that I got.
Have you had any positive sexual experience at this age in your life?
That's a complicated answer. I would say there have been some that have been positive, but I mean mixed with so much like anxiety, fear, and guilt. You know, where like I didn't feel taken advantage of by a person or like I was doing or taking advantage of them and I cared, but like overriding like just panic levels of anxiety and guilt and a lot of shame. You know, like, oh, you're 35. Like, you can barely like physically navigate yourself through the mechanics, you know, just like it's been pretty awful.
Have you ever thought about going to any sort of sex therapist of any kind? What's that movie, Diving Bell and the Butterfly?
Yeah. The Jean-Dominique Bobby.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. I've read the book, too.
Yeah. Have you thought about it at all?
No, that sounds... I mean, I would. I'm real open to new experiences and ways of seeing it now.
Right.
It would.
Well, what's your initial thought when I say something like that?
Can't afford it.
Right. Is it something that you would want to afford?
Yeah. I mean, it's still... I'd still say it's the number one, like, pervasive issue in my life. You know, like, I care. It weighs on me heavier than how I'm going to make money or pay rent or... I mean, it weighs really heavily.
Are you able to separate any sort of emotional relationship from any sort of sexual relationship?
Not so far.
No. Not so far. So immediately when you get involved with somebody on an emotional level, is there already that like ticking in the back of your head that's like, shit, I'm going to have to think about having sex with this person at some point, girl-wise?
I usually assume it's never on the table. So not like I'm going to have to think about it, just that. I mean, to be honest, like my work right now has a really strange dynamic of I don't want to collect people. I'm not out to like find whoever has the most popularity or Instagram followers and work with them. I want to like...
Because you're not trying to make money off of your work.
Extremely emotionally connect with someone.
Right.
And in the nudes...
Okay, well, stop.
Yeah.
What does that mean to extremely emotionally connect with somebody from you?
Yeah. I mean, and just from us talking earlier, I'm realizing that's such a personal answer. But for me, an emotional connection was someone you could talk to about things that are usually off the table, because that's what I think I was lacking.
And on the top of that list is sexuality. Is somebody that you can talk to about what sexuality means?
Yeah, on the top of what I would want to talk about at list. But the funny thing is I'm usually trying to get them to talk more when it's shooting. So that's the top of my list. But
you're trying to get them to talk about what makes them the most uncomfortable. We were having a little bit of this discussion before
you know,
we started.
That sounds a little weird to me of trying to get them to talk about it, trying to create such a beautiful, safe friendship space that if anything they want to let out in making something, I want that to be available and safely available.
For the sake of the experience or for the sake of the film?
For the sake – I mean, that's been another huge shift for me for sure. I used to want to like create situations to get photos. Now I want the experiences and I'll snap photos at the end. So now for the sake of the experience.
And what has been the most fulfilling experience you've ever had in your life?
Of any kind?
Of any kind.
You know, there's a couple that come to mind. I don't know if I can, on the spot, if I can choose the number one.
That's fine.
I really, really wanted to make something significant photography-wise that wasn't just like liked or pretty, but like had spiritual or life value to it. And I got to photograph the 10-day life of one of my nieces who died of brain and heart tumors. I was there when she was born. I took photos of her in the hospital. I wasn't there when she died, but I flew right back. and photographed the funeral and everything. And those photos turned into the tangible record of an entire life. And they're all over my sister's house. You know, like, I got to work on something extremely personal, extremely emotional, what I perceived as valuable, that then turned into, like, a treasured family object. I mean, that's probably the most, like, I did something good I've ever felt.
It's good. Let's talk about the tattoo on your chest for a second.
Yeah.
It's pretty fascinating.
It says, I am in here.
It's just script on his chest, in the middle of his chest, that says, I am in here. What does that mean to you?
So credit where credit's due. It's from the first page of a book called Infinite Jest by mm-hmm. David Foster Wallace. And when I read the sentence, I mean, it just floored me. Because a lot of my life has been intellectual and spiritual and stuck in my head about things. And so little of feeling like, yeah, and I'm a human male and I have a body and I do things. Like, I tried to just ignore that part of it. And when I read the sentence, it was like, I need that reminder. I need to see that frequently, that, like, yeah, you're a thing that thinks about things, and but you're a body too. That's really hard for me.
It's hard for you to know that you are a human being?
Yeah. Yeah, I don't like it.
You don't like it?
I don't. I mean, I don't want to be melodramatic about it, but, you know, waking up, one of my first thoughts is constantly like, I don't want to do this. Even on good days, you know, like a day where I woke up here with one of my good friends in a city I get to visit and get to come talk with you, is something I really wanted to pursue. I rarely wake up with the energy of like, nice. It's usually like, if I had not woken up or woke, not been a thing anymore, like, that'd be fine.
What is your take on spirituality and God at this point in your life?
That I don't know, that I think people who say they know have an agenda, and that I hope there's something beautiful, but don't know if I believe that.
And in terms of a relationship, I mean, what do you see in your future? Does the idea of getting married and having kids, like, does that...
It seems abstract as God. It seems as abstract as spirituality right now. I mean, I can't even pin something down. You know, to even go, like, back to sexuality, I was on a shoot once in another country with someone I got to meet and spend even some time with, and I really liked them and liked their dynamic and everything. We had a really good day together and everything, and talked about some really personal stuff and connected in all the ways I said I wanted, like, to shoot. And at the end, she wanted to have sex, and I said no. And, you know, theoretically on my list, like, a sexual experience with someone I was actually comfortable and attached to and felt close to and made something with and respected and all that, you know, that would have been on the list. And then it was like, okay, here. And I was like, nope.
Why?
Man, I don't even know. I mean, fear is my default answer, like, I was afraid, but I think it's more than that.
Well, okay, so here's the thing. Do you think that you are your, like, absolute worst nightmare?
Me?
Yeah, you.
Oh, yeah. Everything. I mean, I feel like everything I think about wanting or achieving is on the table, and I just stop myself from doing it constantly.
Constantly.
Yeah.
Just because you're afraid is really what it comes down to.
Afraid mixed with, like, zero comfort of, like, a human life. You know, like, yeah, there's something I'm excited about pursuing.
But at the same time, you said to me the other night that your favorite thing in the world is complicated experience.
Yeah.
That is what you seek more than anything.
Yeah.
So when this complicated experience is handed to you in the silver platter
and
you say no,
right,
does that make it more complicated? Is that why you're saying no?
Man, that's a fantastic question. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, fear is huge. Fear is huge. You know, like...
Have you ever smoked weed?
Yeah.
You have?
It saved my life at one point.
So why don't you smoke anymore?
So the first time I ever got high was at the end of that decade, and I was on...
The end of your late 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not on currently, but I mean, I had been on like 40 different prescription medications. Stomach stuff, pain stuff, sleep stuff, depression stuff, anxiety stuff, bipolar stuff. I mean, I have a I have a Word document somewhere of everything I took for a significant period of time.
Everything from lithium to...
Oh, it's everything. Yeah. Everything. And I was just a zombie. And then the first time...
How long were you on all of those?
10 years.
Jesus.
And then the first time I got high, like, I felt love. Like it had been explained. Like I had never felt just like a physical feeling that had like peace accompanying it. 2 weeks after I started smoking weed, I quit all my prescription medications, smoked it almost every day for like 2 years. And then at some point it flipped. And now every time I smoke it, it's just a thought loop, panic attack.
Paranoia.
Yeah. Every time. So I don't really do it anymore.
Edibles included?
Yeah. And that, I mean, that felt so cruel. Like it was really helping me.
Did it?
And then it just got taken away.
Was there shame attached to weed for a long time? Was there something like that you were taught growing up that this was a drug and this was...
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's absolutely...
But is that
forbidden.
Equally as bad as...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, yeah. It's, extremely.
What was the one time where it flipped? Do you remember what happened?
It was really soon after I did ayahuasca for the first time.
Oh, for the first time? How many times have you done ayahuasca?
Well, twice in the ceremony, and then I tried smoking DMT in Australia.
Two totally different experiences.
Yeah. But
I've done DMT. I haven't done ayahuasca. Why did you want to go do ayahuasca?
Desperation. I mean, just doing so bad that like hearing about, oh, this is a profound spiritual drug experience. Like, okay.
Did it work for you? What happened?
It was probably the darkest thing I've ever experienced in my whole life.
Both times.
Yeah. I mean, even the shaman and the guy there were like, this might be the darkest we've ever seen this.
Okay. You need to tell me what happened.
So, I mean, I was so ready for whatever, you know.
To feel something.
To feel something.
Yes.
And I went and I did it the first night and I drank it. And I
wait, hold on. Are you overseas or are you here?
No, I'm in California.
Okay.
Southern California, Los Angeles. And there were no visuals, none, no changes. But then it was like I went to some black hole of trying to throw up my soul. I mean, I did the like purging and then I just got this like overwhelming darkness. And for hours and hours, I was just dry heaving, trying to like throw up me.
Did you get it out?
I got through the nights, but it just left me of this like nothing's ever going to work for you.
Why did you go back and do it a second time?
Well, no, I didn't. I just mean the second night?
So you did it
two nights in a row.
So one ceremony, two nights.
Yeah.
Okay. So second night comes around and you're still high from the first day, right? It's not like it goes away in 24 hours.
Just because like, who cares? You know,
you
like,
were already there.
I came to California, well, you spent all this money.
You seem to care.
I just mean like, I'm not going to not do it.
Go
now
the second
and just
day.
Go home.
Because you double your dose the second night, correct?
No, it was the same. In the one I went to, it was just another of the same.
Okay.
And it wasn't as like.
Were the leaders worried about you the second night?
Yeah. I mean, you know, by like. You do it at like 11 or midnight and it goes to like 8 a.m.
Yeah.
in this one. And at like 4 a.m. after most people's experience was the mega part had kind of wrapped up, they both just took me to a couch and both just sat with me for like 4 hours. And I was just like sobbing and dry heaving and like wanting to die.
I don't want you to take this the wrong way, but I'm going to ask you a question.
It's pretty hard to offend me.
Well,
so.
I'm not – and I don't think it's offensive, but – if it's been so hard being a human for so long, why have you done it for so long?
Why haven't I killed myself? The impact it would have on my siblings mainly. I have a younger sister, 14 years younger than me, that has like my exact brain. I mean, when we get into talking about this kind of stuff, just like the identical thing. And if she killed herself, it would fuck me up pretty bad. I don't want to pass that. I don't want to hurt anybody.
Okay, but do you want to help anybody?
Yeah.
What does that mean to you today?
To me, helping people today, just to go back to it, is talking about stuff that a lot of people don't talk about and being a space for if someone needs to tell me if I'm that person that they can have that conversation with.
Okay. If I was going to ask you what is the one thing that you are not supposed to talk about, what would it be?
Do you mean me now?
You personally in your life, something that's happened that you are not supposed to talk about.
I had some really horrible, painful sexual experiences that did enormous emotional damage, and they're not 100% my story to share. Like, you know, that's the thing that, like, has done the shifting or the damage or the thing that I'm like, that it's...
They're not so... It's not your story to tell because there was somebody else involved.
Yeah.
As you were an adult.
Yeah.
And it was a consensual, without talking about it, this was a consensual experience that you had both gotten into.
Yeah.
And something had happened.
Yeah.
Something bad had happened.
Yeah. I mean, the worst one ever was someone I had really wanted. I had such deep emotional experiences with and really, really wanted a physical component to it. You know, and it wasn't even like, hey, I want us to be having sex. You know, like, that's what I want now. It was just like the emotional depths I had gone to with the person with almost zero physical contact. You know, I'm already tense about having a body and being a thing and being a male and all that stuff, and the complete absence of it just felt like such a gulf. And eventually, after a while, one night she decided she wanted to have sex, and I got the chance to absolutely lay everything out over a long period of time of where I was coming from and what that would mean to me, and saying things I hadn't really told anybody. I mean, I really laid out all of that context of what it would mean to me and how big of a thing touch was and all of that. And then she still wanted to at the end of that, and we did. And right after it, she was like, don't touch me again and don't ever tell anyone this happened. Almost immediately. And it just killed me.
How long was the whole experience, do you think?
What do you mean?
When you decided to actually have sex to when she said, don't ever talk about this ever again. Like, are we talking...
5 minutes.
5 minutes. And if I had her in this room, and I asked her to tell me an experience that she absolutely would be the most uncomfortable talking about, do you think that it would be on the top of her list? Or do you think that you put more weight on it than she does?
Oh, my God. That's an amazing question. I can't speak for her. I don't know the answer to that. Maybe not.
I'm not asking you to speak for her, but do you think? Maybe not.
That was a constant problem for me, as I thought I was having... I don't know what to say.
Okay.
Maybe not.
I've had a good handful of these types of conversations. And when I'm talking to you, I find myself landing to a place where I'm helpless. Like, I don't know what to say. I don't know what to do. Like, if anybody is listening to this and has more of something to say that can help, is it something that you want to hear?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't want to just be a despair machine about it for the rest of my life. It's just, I don't know what to do.
Well, if there's a way that we can find you help that is taken care of and that is not something that you have to worry about paying for, would that be something that you would be interested in doing?
Yeah, I would go for sure.
Okay. Well, I'm going to do whatever I can to help you, bud.
Well, that's pretty nice.
I really mean it from the bottom of my heart.
That's really kind.
I mean, the second I met you the other night, you have affected so much of the way that I, this issue, this conversation is so much bigger than me and you and sexuality. And this is like human condition, right? And I don't know, man. I really appreciate you just even being willing and able and open to have this conversation.
I appreciate you creating a space to have them.
I mean,
I didn't have a lot of, oh, I'm so excited. I mean, I get it's amazing. I'm amazed, you know. Normally I feel like I know myself, and then to sit here and feel the like scared about it again is interesting, at least.
What is the one thing that you are scared most of happening?
Hurting someone.
Hurting someone else.
Yeah.
Okay. I end all of these with one question, and it's what does love ultimately mean to you?
Safety, I guess. The ability to put this kind of stuff into a relationship and be able to talk about it with or without answers.
All right. I love you, bud.
I love you, too. I'm so glad I got to meet you.
Me too.
We're only on like day three.
Yeah, seriously. And I know that you're going to be part of my life forever. I mean, I know that.
I hope so. I love that.
Yeah, it's not even a question. I'm here. I'm not going anywhere. You are safe here.
Yeah, I can feel it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Can I take your photo? Just right here. Without changing anything, I tend to like to...
Hey guys, thanks for listening to this week's episode of The Love Bomb. Whew. All right, look, if anyone out there listened to this and has any ideas or is in the Portland area, which is where Ryan lives, I would love to hear anything that you got. Please email me at thelovebombpodcast@gmail.com. And in the meantime, please support Ryan. Follow him on Instagram. That's at Ryan Muirhead, RyanMuirhead. And I encourage you all to constantly pour yourselves into your work. Ryan, bud, sending you so much love out in the world today and every day. And I just want you to know that you're not alone.